Live from Youngstown, Ohio, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Columbiana County Republican Chairman Dave Johnson, Democratic State Senator Joe Schiavone, and talk show host Dan Rivers of WKBN in Youngstown. Our program tonight coming to you from the studios of Clear Channel Radio, WKBN, the Big 57, in Youngstown, Ohio, actually in Boardman, which is just outside Youngstown. Toll-free lines open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. Nice to have you with us. Nice to be back in Ohio again, where for the next couple of hours, we're going to be talking not only what is transpired in politics in the last 24 hours, and a lot has, but also we'll be looking ahead to the state of Ohio. The key issue, a Senate Bill 5, is something we'll be discussing here. It's created quite a political stir. We'll talk about the pros and cons of it. We'll talk about the stewardship thus far of the new governor, John Kasich, and we'll be talking about a variety of other things, and we have political animals all with us, but again, your phone lines open. 1-800-723-8222 289 is the phone number. The big news, of course, in politics, if we were to look at the headlines, Michelle Bachmann won the Iowa straw poll. How many people are happy with that? How many people are happier that Tim Pawlenty has dropped out? How many people are happier that Rick Perry has jumped in? Okay, moderate. I would say moderate applause. We're going to talk about all of those things. Dave Johnson is one of our guests this evening. He is the longtime Republican Party chairman of Columbiana County. That's in northeast Ohio. It's right on the border with Pennsylvania, one of the most Republican counties in the state, certainly the most Republican county in this neck of the woods, surrounded by a lot of blue counties. We do this program from Mahoning County, which is one of the most Democratic counties in the state of Ohio. Dave, your assessment of just the results of the straw poll yesterday, any surprises, and what signal does this send for at least the next several months for you as a party chairman?
Well, interesting outcome. I'm not all that enamored of Michelle Brockman. I think she's a wonderful person. She's certainly a conservative and on every count. I don't think she's electable. I don't know how representative this straw poll is of the Republican electorate across the country. She campaigned very hard there. She's from Iowa in the next state over. Mitt Romney, who's really the front runner by most counts, didn't even put his name on the ballot there.
Do you have a favorite thus far?
I do. I'm a Romney guy. I worked for Romney in the last election cycle. And he's a fiscal conservative with a great business background, moderate enough that he could be elected governor of Massachusetts as a Republican, which is some feat, and yet conservative enough that I think he can tackle some of the big tax and spend and regulatory issues that are really plaguing this country.
State right Senator now. Joe Schiavone also joins us. He represents the 32nd District, which includes Mahoning County, and is from Canfield, Ohio, where they have the county fair. Joe, nice to have you with us.
Hey, thanks for having me.
I'm going to let you comment. So look across the aisle. Now we're going to come back to Barack Obama in a little bit, but is there anyone in that Republican field that you as a Democrat are worried about in 2012?
I don't think anybody has actually stepped up to the plate and made put themselves in a position to where they would be that lead person, that person that I would be afraid of if I was Barack Obama. At this point, you know, I think you just got to see what happens, you know, let the cards fall where they are, and then, you know, President Obama will take them on and we'll see what happens.
Now, Barack Obama did not do well here in the primary against Hillary Clinton. This is where actually we did the broadcast from this very studio on the day that Governor Strickland had basically endorsed Hillary Clinton, where she said, come on, bring it to Ohio. And obviously he did not do well here. Has his popularity increased because of his conduct as President of the United States in this area?
Honestly, I don't believe it has, and that's kind of troubling for me. But, you know, I think that, you know, people are worried about everything right now. There's so many issues that are going locally, statewide, on the federal level, that people are very upset with what's going on, and it's coming back on President Obama. So I would say no if I had to answer the question.
Dan Rivers also joins us, a veteran talk show host in the morning here on WKBN. Dan, your assessment of that of the Bachmann phenomenon in Iowa, And have you detected any of that through callers to your broadcast?
Well, I think that the kind of echoes what Dave said. Michelle Bachmann, nice lady and very conservative, but not a chance to get elected. And I go back to this and I think about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney has had a lot to do with Bain Capital. And here at Clear Channel, we certainly can relate to Bain Capital and what they have done here at Clear Channel. Very, very tightly run ship. Maybe he could do the same for this country. But not to dodge the entire question, but I think what this country probably needs is what Ron Paul is offering. Unfortunately, that's not in the offing. Ron Paul is offering some real change for this country, and which would actually, we'd start paying our bills.
Well, one of the things that Ron Paul, one of his big applause lines is when he talks about foreign policy, when he talks about the militarism of the United States.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that's never going to have a majoritarian position in a Republican primary. It's enough to get a nice applause at the Hilton.
But you know, I even see Republicans now talking about the long wars and how we are so war weary, and basically we are draining the country of its riches with these wars. And whether or not you're going to get the applause lines or the conservatives, I don't think that every conservative is out there going, you know, we got to continue in Afghanistan, we got to continue in Iraq. I think they're going, wait a minute, let's take care of home. That's what I'm hearing. How about you, Dave?
I agree 100%. I think we're at the point where we have spent so much money to, frankly, ungrateful people, and it's draining the treasury of this country, and I think it's time we say, look, we're going to pull out of there. And if there are any more of these terrorist camps that come in, we're going to come in and blow the smithereens out of your country without
troops.
How many
people here in the audience tonight, show with your applause, believe that the United States should be significantly backing away from its military commitments around the United States? Applaud. How many people here would like Ron Paul to be president of the United States? Okay, well, perhaps...
Yeah.
Perhaps.
I mean, that's kind of the tone I'm getting from the show here, people talking about foreign aid. They're sick of it. And, you know, Barack Obama stands up in a press conference and, you know, we talk about we're giving this and we're giving that. And somebody says, hey, we're borrowing 4 cents out of every 10 cents. How do you give any money to anybody if you're borrowing 4 cents out of every 10 cents? And I know that's a populist line to take, but it makes sense to you folks, right?
Joe, when you're talking to your liberal or progressive friends, you say Barack Obama may not be as popular here as you would like him to be. Is his position on the war, because again, he's pretty much of a hawk when it comes to military issues, is that one of the things that may be hurting him in this area?
I absolutely think it is. It's something that has bothered me about President Obama is, you know, when he came in, he said he was going to pull these troops out, and he hasn't. And, you know, you see those things like when the 30 Navy SEALs died. I mean, that affects people so deeply, and they don't want to see our young people over there anymore. And it's gonna hurt them, I think.
Right. But you would acknowledge that a candidate doesn't know as much as a president when it comes to what's really going on in the world. And sometimes a president's hand may be tied.
Well, and there's no doubt about that. And I think people realize that. But, you know, when you say something and then you don't do it, it affects you. And that might be something that's going to hurt him.
Our telephone number is 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, I'm Bruce Dumont. Tonight from WKBN in Youngstown, Ohio.
We'll be right back.
From Salem, Illinois to Salem, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. We have callers on the line. Let's head to Youngstown, Ohio. Jeff is listening to us on WKBN this evening. Jeff, go ahead.
Yes. You know, I hear everybody talking about everything that they're, you know, they're speculating about the caucuses and all the different things that are happening. But here's the thing. You need to really pay attention to not just the talking heads that are talking. The people are who are really are making the difference. I don't care what happened up there in the straw poll yesterday. The straw poll yesterday is not a realistic view of yesterday, of the United States. And plus, when you're talking about the first African-American black president of the United States, you're not talking, you're also talking to a certain spectrum of people that don't, you know, that don't fit the regular bill. Here, right here on your program, you talked about how the African-Americans in America have the same views and the same interests as the Caucasian people in America. And that is
I'm not quite following your point here. I think the one thing that, and I want to get reaction because it seems like every 4 years we have this discussion that, you know, Iowa is not representative of America. New Hampshire is not representative of America.
That's true.
We all throw up our hands and we say, why do we keep going back to this? So, Dave, I want to get your reaction. I mean, you're a party leader in one of the most important states.
Right.
When is your primary next year?
Ours has actually been moved back to the normal primary season in May. So we really will not play a role in this primary cycle.
You know what? I disagree with you. I think this is a race that's going to come down probably to a two-person race. I think being late in the cycle may mean something.
Well,
but again, it is aberrational. And when you look, here we are, the greatest nation on earth. And let's think what happened yesterday in Iowa. People were paid to come to a party so they could vote. They were paid to vote. They could go and they could be entertained. They could fill them up with barbecue sauce, whatever the case may be. And then, because one person gets 200 more votes than the other, she is declared the winner. Only 16,000 people voted. And they determine the momentum to become the next president of the United States. Although recent history is that just winning the Iowa straw poll doesn't get you to the White House. In fact, it hasn't happened for a while. So, in Chicago, where I come from, if you pay people to vote, you go to prison. This is a nominating process. You pay people, you give them a barbecue, and all of a sudden, it's built into the system. This is idiotic.
Yeah, I think it's kind of ridiculous.
But how do you break it? There's a conspiracy between the Iowa GOP and the New Hampshire GOP. They conspire that the two of them are going to be the big wheels in the process. And no one in those other 48 states have ever been able to get together and conspire against those two for dominating this process, which is aberrational at best.
Yeah. Well, it's a tough issue. I don't know how you change a legacy situation like this that has gone on for so long. I don't know that anyone has the power to change it. It is frustrating. It's frustrating to me.
What about it?
Well, I mean, you know, you were talking about, it's really over for Ohio, right? I mean, not much of a role in who's going to represent us.
I disagree.
We'll be very late in the game. I mean, most of the primaries will have taken place by the time our May primary happens.
Mm-hmm. It's quite accidental sometimes, Bruce, on who becomes the nominee. You think about Mr. Perry jumping in like this. He could catch fire, and, the same with Chris Christie. Could he be a late draft? Probably not at this point. What we want, right?
In the last election cycle, I can remember McCain, as late as February, them calling me and saying, we need delegates to the convention. We couldn't even find a delegate. He wasn't even in the running. And Huckabee and Romney split the vote, and McCain came in and became our nominee almost by accident.
See, that's why I think I'm going to be back here next May at WKBN, and we're going to be on the eve of the Ohio primary, and it's still going to mean something. Just as I think we're going to see a Republican replay of what happened between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton. It's going to go down to the end. Joe?
Yeah, I think it's going to be close. I mean, I like you were saying before, though, it's frustrating when people hear stuff like, you know, about how it works when people get paid to go to the barbecue and then they pick and they make the decisions. It shouldn't be like that, and something has to change with that. It's totally ridiculous.
Bob in Chicago on line two, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, guys. Straw poll was a huge victory for Ron Paul. You know, Michelle Bachmann bought 6,000 tickets, and only 4,800 of the people that she bought tickets for even voted for her.
Yeah.
But I think the treatment by the press has been despicable. Last night, after the announcement of the straw poll, which was very strange to begin with, because
yep.
the moderator just came out and said, Michelle Bachmann's the winner, and then walked off stage. And then C-SPAN scrolled the winners, and they didn't even show the top three winners on in the scrolling. They kept going through the one that showed that Santorum got 1,600 votes. But after the announcement, CNN and MSNBC spoke repeatedly about Rick Perry. That was the big news of the day. Forget Michelle Bachmann. Forget Ron Paul especially. It was Rick Perry that's the guy that's coming to us. And I'm sure that has nothing to do with his having attended the 2007 Bilderberg meeting and was blessed by the elite as being the heir apparent to, you know, the last Bilderberg nominee.
But what you have to do, I'm not going to go down that line because we can discuss it at further broadcast. He is coming out of an establishment right perspective, but I have to hand it to Rick Perry's panelers, and we're going to talk about it later in the broadcast with Kenny Reimeyer, who's going to join us from LBJ, KLBJ in Austin, Texas. It was brilliant. He totally upstaged what was happening in Iowa. That was brilliant. He's going to be in Iowa tomorrow. He's going to be having a bus tour in Iowa. He's in Iowa tonight at the Lincoln Day Dinner as we're speaking right now. Tomorrow he's going to go on a bus tour, coincidentally on the same day that President Obama is going to go on a bus tour in Iowa. Well, he's going to get a big share of that news, even though he wasn't there. He's running a very strategically, I think, brilliant campaign thus far, and I want to get your reaction, because one of the criticisms of your guy, Mitt Romney, thus far, Dave, is that he may be a little too aloof. He may be playing back a little bit too much. I mean, as a party chairman, do you believe? Are you worried about that?
Well, somewhat. I'd like to see more of him. But from what I know of the campaign and insiders in the campaign, he is working quietly all across the country, raising enormous amounts of money. And that's going to be critical to carry through this entire process. I think Perry has got a lot of catching up to do. Every state has its pockets of key financial support, and I can tell you in Ohio that the major players in this process are all lined up behind Romney, and I just feel that right now he doesn't want to get overexposed. There is plenty of time, and he's going to be a statesman, and he's going
to
be...
And I think to echo that, Dave, too, not to jump in, but... If you're putting your money on somebody, you've got to look at somebody that obviously has a chance to defeat Barack Obama.
That's right.
And he is the guy that already has the organization.
Hey, I'll unite behind anyone that can beat Barack Obama.
How do you, Dan, because you agreed with what David said, that you don't think Michelle Bachmann can make it all the way. Why not?
Well, the reason I think it's almost like it's not her time yet. And Mitt Romney has had the experience of the past campaign, lots of fundraising, and we know that these campaigns are not won by saying, hey, a splashy announcement. It's all about money and on-the-ground organizing. That's where I see that Mitt Romney has had this, and, you know, he hasn't been idly sitting by for the last 2 years.
Oh, no.
I think also history, again, this is something you remember, history is against her. Only once, I believe, once in the history of the country, has anyone gone from the House to the presidency? I mean, think about it. When Dick Gebhardt was the majority leader of the House, he couldn't do it. When John Kasich ran, he was the head of the Budget Committee. I mean, when he ran, a few cycles ago, he had no traction. I mean, last time was the first time since 1960 that someone even from the Senate was accepted by the American. Now, the American people tend to go with governors. So, I mean, I think the road to hope for Michelle Bachmann is, historically, it's not on her side. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with what she looks like, what she talks like. It's just historically, I don't think people...
But your applause out here was pretty good for Michelle.
That's true.
Michelle, right?
But keep in mind, If you're a member of the House, this is what the founding fathers decided. The members of the House were the closest body to the people. So someone coming from the House represents the evolving positions and changing voting patterns of the American people. But that's historically, that's not the way it turns out. Joe?
Yeah, I'm not sure that people really worry about whether that person's a governor or they're in Congress or they're a senator. I think they're just looking for somebody to get out, relate to them, and just catch on as somebody that they really want to lead the country.
Well, I think they want to do that, but again, historically, they tend to find those people who have some experience in governing or administering, and that's usually a governor. And again, there will be some people, Republicans, saying, wait, you know, we have a president now who came out of the Senate, and we don't think he's administering very well. But that's a debate, as we will continue when we continue at 1-800-723-8029, live from Youngstown, Ohio. From Hanover Park, Illinois to Hanoverton, Ohio, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8029 is the telephone number, coming to you tonight from the Clear Channel Radio in Youngstown, Ohio. And it's nice to have you with us this broadcast. By the way, we've got a nice turnout here at the station, and the Baird brothers, and they're in the sawmill, traditional craftsmanship business, and they're America's source for fine hardwood products since 1960, and they are the sponsor of tonight's broadcast from WKBN. It's nice to have you with us wherever you're listening, from coast to coast and border to border on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. Around the table this evening, we have Dan Rivers, veteran host in the mornings on WKBN, always our host. Always good to have him as a
Thanks,
co-host
Bruce.
When we come
nice
to Youngstown. Republican County Chairman in Columbiana County, that's Dave Johnson. That's just outside of Mahoning County. And you were recently appointed to a position on the Workmen's Compensation Board by
yes.
Governor Kasich.
Yes, I was.
And what do you have to do in that role?
Well, this is an 11-member board that is comprised of business people and labor leaders, and they've got an auditor on there and an actuary. It's really an oversight board that has full fiduciary responsibility for a $21 billion state employment workers' comp fund. And so it's really a policymaking board. We're not really involved in the adjudicatory side of it, but setting long-range plans and
policies.
And you've
been to a couple of meetings so far?
Been to my first two meetings, trying to get my hands around a really big organization, one of the largest funds in the country.
Were you an early supporter of Kasich?
I have been a supporter of Kasich for a long time, yes.
Now, have you been approved by the Senate yet?
You know what? That's a good question,
Joe Schiavone is the he's a member of the Senate.
I'm still thinking about it.
Don't you have to approve him?
Yeah, and you know, I do a lot of work with that committee because I'm a workers' comp lawyer.
Uh-huh.
We represent injured workers, my dad and I, and so I'm the ranking member on the insurance committee. So we'll be doing a lot of work together. I think I'll give him the vote.
I've been approved because I've been to two meetings,
no, I'm
Joe.
Just
so.
Well, we have another senator coming up in the next hour. We may get you two votes tonight.
There you go.
Also, your family owns the Spread Eagle Tavern in Hanover Town,
yes.
Which is one of the big major places to eat in the
area. Well,
it's
an old tavern and inn that was built in 1837, and
it's not
a real big place, but it's a fine dining restaurant and a bed and breakfast.
Well, Columbiana County is a beautiful county. In fact, I was there visiting a friend in the Elkton area, and I went to Pondy's Restaurant, one of your competitors.
Great
last
place.
Evening. Great. They've been there since 1916.
Yeah.
There was like, what was around there in 1916?
Well,
lot of horse manure.
Lisbon was the county seat, so yeah.
We've got callers on the line. Let's head to Columbus, Ohio, where Anthony wants to bring in a big issue. Actually, it was the issue that sort of brought us to Ohio. He wants to talk about Senate Bill 5. Very controversial, and let's find out what Anthony wants to know. Go ahead, Anthony.
Well, first I want to thank you for coming to Ohio and bringing a national spotlight to this issue. You know, Senator Schiavone has been a champion of working families in the state since he was reelected after his appointment, and we appreciate his no vote. I'm not a public employee, but I am a union Democrat, and you know, this bill is just unfair. It's an unfair attack on public sector collective bargaining rights. It's going to hurt our public employees, and it's really a shame that you know these extreme anti-worker politicians in, that have gone to Columbus have made these decisions. You know, I just heard Mr. Johnson talking about, or Chairman Johnson talking about the workers' compensation committee has been appointed to, and that's really going to be the next big fight. You know, first they've taken collective bargaining away from public sector employees, or at least have limited the scope that they're allowed to bargain around. And now the next big fight is going to be workers' compensation privatization, where they're going to completely try to privatize Ohio's workers' compensation program. You know, there's draft language already in the legislature where they're going to try to do this. And it just seems to be one blow after another, whether it's a worker or a voters' rights or voter suppression bill that they just passed recently that we're attempting to repeal. I just don't get it. And maybe Senator Schiavone and you know the chairman there could talk a little bit more about you know their perspectives.
I want to do that, but I want to take just one second to ask Dan Rivers, for those listening around the country who don't quite understand what Senate Bill 5 is. It is similar in nature to what was going on in Wisconsin.
Yeah,
but some people describe it as maybe a little more punitive.
Well, I have
and
to
yet
laugh.
It's also going to be on the ballot in November.
Yes,
so it's passed the both houses, and the voters are now going to ratify or throw it over. But
right.
Elaborate.
So we had, you know, it went through the House, went through the Senate by one vote, and it would have become law, but they've gone out and they've got a lot of ballots and a lot of signatures. Interestingly enough, the people who were against this never brought up one amendment to try to maybe mitigate some of the problems they have with it. But when somebody says there's an attack on the middle class, maybe they're just talking about 6%. There's only 359,000 workers here in the state, and you've got 5.5 million workers. What about them? The people here in the state of Ohio typically pay 31% of their health care. People in the state government typically are paying 9%. In this bill, they're going to have to go up to 15%. So that's all we're asking. They will still be getting much better benefits than any most of your middle-class workers here. Hardly an attack on the middle class, in my opinion. Our government in Ohio exceeds, it's, and I don't mean to make a speech, but it exceeds the ability to pay for what we have here in Ohio. We're already, correct me, Dave, I'm seventh most taxed people in the nation.
All right, let's let Joe respond because he disagrees with some of your analysis there.
Well, yeah, I mean, when you know, he's talking about why we didn't do any amendments. Well, I sat down on the first day of committee, and a 1,000-page bill was in front of my face, and the chairman of the committee said, "Does anybody have any questions on this bill?" And I mean, I'm not joking one bit. I looked around. I said, "Are you kidding me?" The next day, we get testimony from Senator Jones. She has no idea what's in the bill. She's just kind of talking about it generally, not answering questions. And then they say, "You have a few days to amend this bill." How do you amend a bill when nobody wants to talk to you about it and it's 1,000 pages? They wanted to get this thing out as soon as possible. They pulled people off the committee so they could pass it, and they moved it through the Senate. You know, six Republicans crossed the line to vote for it and only passed by one vote.
So, again, this isn't just all Republicans and all Democrats.
Bruce, it is. It's a very partisan party line issue in Ohio, and I can tell you, you have to look at this in the perspective of the state budget. We just came through an $8.5 billion deficit that we had to shore up. We've lost 400,000 jobs in this state in the last 4 years. We're the third highest population loss in the country. Most of the communities around this area are broke. The school districts are broke. And one of the fundamental problems, not the only problem, but a big problem, are the public sector pensions and health care plans that are way, way out of line. And real briefly, in my little town of Salem, Ohio, 81 employees, public employees in the city of about 12,000 people, the employees have 9 weeks paid time off. They have a health care plan with zero deductible and a 9% contribution to their health care plan. The health care plan is a $23,000 family coverage plan, which is probably $10,000 above, almost double what the national average is.
Joe,
these communities can't afford it.
Joe, what grade would you give public employees in their ability to understand the anger and the frustration of voters who hear a stat just like Dave articulated and say, wait a minute, what? This, something stinks here. Have they come to the table in your view? Do they understand that this is a different point in time in history and the glory days of the past are not here anymore?
I think they absolutely do. I mean, you see all these contracts now where it's pay freeze and they're voluntarily increasing the pay of their contribution to healthcare. I mean, people are reasonable. They've given back $250 million in concessions in the last year. I mean, we're at a time where nobody's greedy. Nobody wants raises. People just want to keep their jobs. They want to be able to feed their families. They want to be able to live their
life. Yeah, but Joe, they want to keep the healthcare benefits here less than 15%. We're only asking that they give 15%. Is that so out of line?
But who's they? Who's that?
The state employees give 15%. Take 31. Take the rest of the state of Ohio. Put an aggregate amount of people together, and they are paying about 31% in health care, which is not great. I don't like that either. But you can't be paying zero or the average in state employee, which is 9.
Well, here's the issue with Senate Bill 5, though. If we would have just addressed some individual things like that, that's something that everybody may have voted on, and we could have got there.
But let's
go
back. But
to take away all collective bargaining rights from public employees, I mean, that's not what you're talking about. Yes, it is. Because,
no. Well, they still have collective bargaining rights on wages.
No, they don't.
Terms and conditions of work.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll let you make a decision on if you think they have collective bargaining rights, if you can give me 1 second. Okay.
Go ahead.
So now it goes down to a neutral third-party arbitrator to make that decision if there's a discrepancy. If Senate Bill 5 was to pass, the final decision is made by the elected officials of the geographical area. So if the police have a discrepancy with management, then the trustees make the decision. So where do you think they're going to come down every time? The Republicans that voted no on Senate Bill 5 did their floor speeches, and they said it's collective begging because you can go to the table, you could talk about it, but you're never going to win one.
But, Joe, wouldn't you rather have those people really tell you the truth? I'm an elected public official. I'm making it on a local decision, and I'm saying, here's what I have. We've gone to arbitration. We reject that. Here's the money that we have.
What has this? We're going to take a call on this subject in a moment. What has this issue and the heat of this issue, it's likely to get hotter as voters will vote in November. What has it done to the daily operation, life every day? Is there tension in the grocery stores? Is there tension in the hardware stores?
It's a very, very contentious issue,
so this
and very misunderstood issue. Reasonable people can disagree, but we're asking for minimal contributions by public employees to their health care and their pension and to basic step increases, automatic step increases. Those are going to have to go by the wayside.
We have calls on this subject, 1-800-723-8229, from coast to coast and border to border. And if you're listening in the great Buckeye State, hop on the line, 1-800-723-8229, from coast to coast and border to border. Tonight, from Youngstown, Ohio, I'm Bruce Goodman. California, from Beverly Hills, California, to Boardman, Ohio. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8229 is the telephone number. We're talking about the Senate Bill 5. It is is it almost like a civil war has broken out here?
I don't know.
I mean, it's tension?
It hasn't really heated up yet. I mean, there was a period when it was going to be passed, Bruce. Now we're going into the second segment here where people are going to be putting money on both sides of the table here. And just a bit of an anecdote. Toledo, Ohio, where they have a new mayor there, they've had to cancel street paving there to pay salaries. Findlay, Ohio, place where I grew up in that area, flooding. They had to get rid of their flooding mitigation to pay salaries. That's how serious it is in the state of Ohio. Now, I'm not blaming it on all the state employees because I've got a lot of friends out there that are state employees. We're looking for a sense of fairness. I think that's where Mr. Johnson and I are coming from and saying, you know what? You can't have people paying 31% of their health care and other people paying none. You can't have people paying no retirement and other people paying, getting just Social Security.
What? Before I go to a question from the audience, I want to get Joe's response to what happened this past week in Wisconsin, where obviously the issue of recall. Governor Walker is not eligible for a recall this year. The indication is that there will be a recall try next year. And again, the Wisconsin plan is a little less punitive than this plan appears to be, at least for some. And this past week, the Republicans retained control of the Senate. Two of them went down to defeat. They were recalled. Three survived. And next week, it's the Democrats that have to defend their position. Did that result surprise you, Joe? And or how do you read it as a politician?
A little bit, but you know, I think that you know that isn't that big of a win for the Democrats. I mean, it's a tough area there, and people are struggling just like they are in Ohio. And I think that you know their version of Senate Bill 5, they didn't have police and fire included, and ours does, and that's why they say ours is more strict, and it surely is, because police and fire won't even be able to collectively bargain on safety equipment, things that they need to protect the communities, and that's. I mean, that just doesn't make sense to me.
We've got a question from the audience. Ron Verba, afternoon host on WKBN, joins us in the audience, and he's with a lady who's got a question. Your name, ma'am?
Barbara.
And your
Gentile.
Question?
I would like to say I'm for SB 5, and for this reason. I live in a small city in the state of Ohio over here, and we were at a caucus meeting before the council meeting, and we had a... Before the union come in and threaten our council that they better give the police and firemen a raise, or you know they would take them to court because they had more money with the unions and that, and they're under physical watch right now. We don't have any money over there, but it just broke my heart to see this representative flown in from Pittsburgh to come in and threaten our council that they would sue them if they didn't raise the police and firemen wages.
Are other people in the audience sensing outside pressures either for or against this bill in your daily lives? I see a number of nodding heads. Can we get some testimony from this gentleman right over here? Right next to you, Ron. Gentleman right next to you.
I think that my name is Mike O'Hara, and I think that there's going to be a lot of money that's going to be coming in from outside the state of Ohio that is going to be put in to keep the Senate bill the way that it is. And I think that that's really bad, because the people of Ohio, just as any place in the nation, are struggling to survive, and special interest money is going to be put into an issue that should be limited to the people in the state of Ohio. Special interests from outside the state have no interest in our state. Their only interest is to keep what they want in there, which is to keep things the way they are. People need to collectively bargain as a group instead of individuals, because if you take Martin Luther King fought for this 40 years ago to put the Pullman train people, to give them the right to be able to negotiate. Norma Rae, the movie that was based on the movie Norma Rae, she fought to put the textile workers together. And now you have a Senate bill that says, well, we don't want you to collectively bargain anymore. And people with outside interests, they're not really truly for the people of the state of Ohio.
Does the intensity of what is likely to happen to build up to November, doesn't that set the stage for the key issue for the presidential election next year? Because you're going to have a Republican and Democrat clearly on opposite sides of that issue. Is that maybe what Barack Obama needs? We talked about whether a lack of intensity for Barack Obama may be a problem for him. Is this what gives him intensity if he comes down, you know, against this bill?
Well, I think that it would definitely help him to come, you know, talk a little bit more about the bill and you know get the interpretation and the impressions from people in Ohio, and we'll see what happens. You know, I think it's important for public employees, for teachers, police, and fire to go out and talk about what they do for a living, talk about how much they make, because you'll find out that it's not that much. I mean, our Mahoning County sheriffs collectively bargain to make $12 an hour. I mean, is that fair? I think so. I mean, it's ridiculous that that people think that they're making all this money, but they're barely able to pay their bills.
Is this, Dave, you know, in a presidential, well, you know, I'm gonna ask the question, and I want to get your reaction in the next hour. A criticism of the Democrats by the National Republican Party is that the Democratic Party likes to have pit groups against each other economically. That there's an envy. They're against the rich because they make too much. Is that working in this debate because the average Ohioan may not like that a public sector person is making more money than they are. Is it class warfare reversed? Parties different on different sides. I want you to think about that during the break. 1-800-723-8220. And by the way, Joe Schiavone's been the state senator, is the state senator, been with us in hour number one. Joe, thanks very much for being with us on the maiden voyage.
Thank you.
From our broadcast this evening. And Capri Cafaro, who is also the state senator from Youngstown, born in Youngstown, from Hubbard, Ohio. She will be joining. She is the minority leader of the Ohio House and Ohio Senate, rather. She will be with us in the next hour as well. 1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. Tonight, taking America's political pulse from Youngstown, Ohio. From Youngstown, Ohio, this is Christy Martin with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway, offering national political analysis tonight featuring Republican County Chairman Dave Johnson of Columbiana County. We also have State Senator Capri Cafaro. She is the minority leader of the Ohio Senate. And talk show host from WKBN, Dan Rivers. A little bit later on in this broadcast, we'll also be hearing from Mahoney County Democratic Chairman Dave Purchase, and also we'll be checking in on a variety of other things happening in the state. We are in a knockdown, drag-out discussion of Senate Bill 5. This is a bill here in the state of Ohio that is dominating the political landscape. Things are very heated up on both sides. It is something that has passed both houses of the Ohio legislature, signed by Governor Kasich. It will be on the referendum ballot in November of this year. And a question before the break. I asked Dave Johnson, who is a longtime Republican chairman of Columbiana County, which is one of the most Republican counties in the Buckeye State. I asked him about the criticism that Republicans make of Democrats. They accuse Democrats historically of class warfare. And my question to you, since part of what Senate Bill 5 is about is how much people make, how much they pay, whether they're paying their fair share or not, do you think that in this debate the tables have been switched? And now it is the Republican Party that may inadvertently be perceived as playing class warfare against public employees and raising the specter to the general public that this person and that person make too much money.
Bruce, I think it's ironic that critics of SB 5 and the collective bargaining reform that we're discussing say that this is an attack on middle-class America and middle-class Ohioans. And I can tell you the middle-class Ohioans and the people, especially in this region, that have 10 and 11% unemployment, with record-level home foreclosures, the economy, I hardly recognize my little town anymore. The economy has been so decimated. They're concerned, for them, to, we've had three different tax initiatives recently for a 50% increase in the local income tax to support a city budget that is bloated because of these pension and health care expenses primarily. 70% of the people in our community voted those down in the last 2 years. They're not going to dig deeper in their pockets to pay for health and welfare benefits that they don't have. And they look at this as basic, I think they're moderate reforms that we're talking about.
If I
Senator
may
Cafaro
add,
is here. Go ahead, Senator.
Thank you very much. And I do want to say I've known Chairman Bill Johnson for Chairman Dave Johnson for a very long time, and I very much respect his viewpoints, but I do have to respectfully disagree in what he's saying. First of all, in the assertion that Democrats play class warfare, I think that that's a really mid-20th century notion of the Democratic Party. In my view, Democrats, their primary objective is to provide and create a situation that creates opportunity for all Americans and all Ohioans. So to me, it's not about class warfare. It's about being able to have a decent-paying job so you can send your kids to college and pay your mortgage so you're not ending up in foreclosure and the like, and that you're able to pay your medical bills so you're not going in filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy, which is the primary reason why people file bankruptcy in the United States of America. So as far as the Democrats engaging in class warfare, I do disagree with that. In regards to, quote-unquote, bloated government spending at the local level, I just want to talk about it from the perspective of my local communities. I represent two counties to the north of here, Trumbull and Ashtabula counties. These are really, Trumbull County is, you know, I would say leans Democrat for sure, but Ashtabula County is a 50-50 split. We have rural communities, we have rural poverty, we have mass unemployment due to the decline of our industrial base, and as such, our tax base has declined. And our local governments have responded in kind. They have taken cuts. They have increased their portions of health care that they have contributed for their public employees, whether it be police, fire, teachers. And we passed a budget, of which I voted against, maybe 2 months ago now, that actually took away monies from our local communities and brought it back to the state. We robbed Peter to pay Paul. And guess what, Mr. Chairman, with all due respect, it's going to create a situation whereby we're going to have to pass more levies just to keep the lights on. Forget the bloated government.
I want to follow up on that by bringing Dan Rivers into the conversation. In the last hour, Dave Johnson said, I think that Ohio, for the third census in a row, you're losing people? Mm-hmm. You're losing population?
We're the third highest loss of population in the country.
Why are people leaving Ohio, in your view, Dan?
Well, I think it's just opportunity. They're going to, obviously, Texas and the Carolinas and getting out of here. The weather doesn't entice people to stay here either. But essentially, people have said, I'm going to go where I can make a living. And to Capri's point, I
but
understand.
You had Democratic governors during that period.
Yeah, but
so
I mean,
Democratic
but
governors,
it's not just us. No, the only other states
we've
that are losing
more. We've had Republican governors since 1990.
Right.
Yeah, but the states that are losing even more than us are Michigan. I mean, and you know, we've lost a lot in the auto industry also. The Northeast Ohio here, in fact, if we had kept our jobs after the steel mills had closed, we'd be in pretty good shape. We continued to lose population, continued to lose jobs, etc. But to come more to the point here, Capri was just talking about, well, we're going to have to go back and we're going to have to mitigate on this side because people can't keep the lights on. But what would you have us do when we have an $8 billion deficit in the state of Ohio? What would you have us do?
Well, I mean, first of all, and actually myself and Mr. Johnson were talking about this prior to the beginning of the segment. There's actually a lot of statistical analysis out there that shows that our $8 billion hole is not necessarily an $8 billion hole.
Maybe it's six.
Probably closer to four or five, but let's actually put this in historic perspective, okay? During the previous 4 years under the Strickland administration, we actually cut $2 billion. We laid off and did forced attrition and retirement for over 3,500 employees.
Right.
And our state government was at 1983 levels.
What did you do with the stimulus money? You spent it. Washington sent you the stimulus money under the Strickland administration. You spent it to pay the bills.
No, we spent it on education. We spent it on what's called enhanced.
You spent it.
When actually, we have a carryover, as a matter of fact. We have a carryover, and we actually exceeded expectations when it came to receipts.
But Capri, with all due respect,
you guys are so polite.
Your party, she's one of my favorite legislators. With all due respect, your party lost every office in the last election. You lost governor. You lost the House of Representatives. You lost every state constitutional office. And there was a mandate in this state to reform the government, cut expenses, and not raise taxes.
Let me just say this. We did not raise taxes, and we were all very committed to that. Now, what happened is that in order to keep that pledge to an extent, we did rob Peter to pay Paul.
You kicked the can down the road.
Senator, let me ask you a question. Why did you lose every race then?
Now, take a look at 2010 across the country. It's not necessarily just a mandate here in Ohio.
It was a sea change.
It's not necessarily, I think, a backlash about. And here, I would say, take a look at 2012, because you look at the debt ceiling, you look at everything, people are disgusted. People reacted. You took 40 years. For for us to change from Democrat to Republican to the 1994 revolution with the Contract with America. It took another 12 for it to switch, and it took another 4 to switch back. This is about disgust with government, not about disgust with one party or another.
Disgust with liberals, with all due respect.
We've got to pause. 1-800-723-8029. We've got lots of callers on the line from Austin, Texas, from Columbus, Ohio, and from Auburn, Illinois. You'll hear them all from Youngstown, Ohio. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight. Spokane, Washington to Elkton, Ohio. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway. 1-800-723-8289 is the phone number. Joining us this evening is the Democratic chairman of Mahoning County, Dave Beatrice. Dave, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway.
A big Mahoning Valley welcome to you, and thank you for bringing your national show to our neck of the woods. Let me just jump in here real quick.
Sure.
And tell you something. I want to tell you, thanks for evening up the score, because you have a Tea Party member and a conservative Republican. You've had one Democrat in the first hour. I thank you for evening it up on the second hour. But let me say this to Dan Rivers especially and to Dave Johnson. Shame on both of them. Because let me tell you what's going on right here in Mahoning County. Let me bring it back and synthesize why you don't take out a shotgun to kill a fly. You take out a fly swatter. We have the largest police department, or one of the two largest police departments, east of Akron and south of Cleveland in the state of Ohio. Our county borders Pennsylvania. That's how far over to the east we are. We have 300 members of our Mahoning County Sheriff's Department. 104 of those 300 members that go out there and arrest drug dealers and put on bulletproof vests make less than $12 an hour. With a spouse and two children, that qualifies them for poverty level. And that was done through collective bargaining.
Dave,
shame on you for saying that they need to make less.
Shame on you for not being honest.
Shame on you for saying that they need to make less money.
Because we didn't
say police
that.
Yes, nobody did.
No, you're
a
wrong.
A police officer who puts his life on the line and has to be at poverty level when
he's
married.
I've been waiting to straighten you out for a long time.
I've been wanting to debate you,
yeah.
Dave Johnson,
well,
for months.
I'm glad you finally showed up.
I wish News Radio would put me on with you, and we can go at it.
Let's do it, buddy.
Because you know something?
Gentlemen.
Now you see why this issue is so fired up.
No one. I'm glad I'm here, but keep in mind, no one around the country can hear if two people are talking at once. I will engage the debate. Dave Johnson, your chance to return the rally.
Mr. Beatrice,
yes.
This bill does not in any way prohibit collective bargaining on wages, on terms and conditions of employment. It doesn't change the protective gear. I heard some of them say that this is going to prevent them from bargaining for collective gear for firemen. That is untrue.
That's false.
It is untrue. Okay, I'm glad you
because
admitted
if you,
it.
You
so,
as
so
an
don't
employer,
bring up
Dave
wages.
Purchase, minute, you as
Dave
an employer,
Purchase, Dave Purchase.
If you as Purchase. An employer, you have a bargaining unit, and you have the final say-so of what they get or don't get. That isn't collective bargaining. That's collective begging. And as to the safety equipment, here's what they are allowed to collective bargain about. Bulletproof vests, maybe a helmet. Cars, no. Work conditions, no. Work shifts, no. Anything that they know more about, no. Now, let me tell you something else, Bruce, that they've done in Senate Bill 5. He sits on a board for the workers' comp. All boards and commissions and politicians, guess who's exempt from Senate Bill 5? Every elected office holder in the state of Ohio doesn't have to pay 15% for their health care, okay? If you are on a board or commission, you get free health care. You don't have to pay 15%, but a worker does.
I don't get health care on the board that I serve on, but
you're certainly eligible for it.
But they should correct that. And they ought to all pay it.
Dave, you and I agree on something.
Dave, I want to go back and say one thing you said earlier about the Mahoning County Sheriff's Department. That has nothing to do with SB 5. It's shameful what we pay those people. They need higher wages.
But that happened through collective bargaining.
However, that is something that's going to be mitigated over time, but it's nothing to do with SB 5, and you're being dishonest by saying that these guys
that make less than $12 an hour
wages have
now have
to
pay 15% of their health care, are they making less an hour than they were before?
They need to have a
Are they making less an hour than they were before? Answer that question.
Yes, they are.
Okay, I want to ask
a political question to the chairman of the Mahoning County Democratic Party.
Go ahead.
What lesson did you learn from what happened in Wisconsin last week, where they had the recall? Do you have a recall in Ohio?
No, we have no recall.
Okay, so there's no
provisions.
Recall.
Okay. We have
Do you think was sent last week in Wisconsin when, again, there were five senators they tried to recall? Two of them got recalled, three did not, and there was no change in the power of the Republican Party in the state of Wisconsin.
Looking at it politically, here's what it is.
Yeah.
Just like Congress has overall terrible ratings nationwide, yet almost every one of them return. Because if you ask a person, do you like your congressman? I like my congressman. It's all the other congressmen I hate. You had a historic low voter turnout. I think it was 20 to 25% in Wisconsin. Most people like their elected representative. Most people are not a single-issue voter. So if you made a referendum with a low voter turnout about a single issue, I'm not surprised. I'm not going to be surprised if the Democrats don't change much. Because it just makes sense. Historically, Congress is at the lowest level ever. And yet a majority of them will be returned to office.
Is the referendum a simple majority, or does it have to be two-thirds?
In
the one coming up in November?
No, just simple. Just if it wins by one vote, it's overturned.
Just like the referendum in Wisconsin that just took place, though, you understated the fact that they spent $30 million, your side did, on the overturning of these and the recall of these candidates, and you lost. You did not gain back control.
When you say I lost, I didn't have any.
Your movement lost. National movement.
Is money.
Well, at least you've now admitted that Walker and Kasich are in bed together, and it is a national movement.
You bet it
is. To take away workers' rights. Now I have an admission from a Republican operative that this is a national movement to take away people's, to attack the middle class.
You don't have a hearing problem, you have a listening problem.
Senator Cafaro.
Okay, let me just say, and while I love and appreciate both Dave Beatrice and Dave Johnson, this is exactly why people hate politics, okay? Because this bickering and the squabbling gets to a level where we're dealing just with barbs and talking points, and we're not dealing with the reality of policy. And that is why I'm here. I may be a Democrat, but I try to be fair-minded to both sides. And I will say, in regards to Wisconsin, I think in regards to money in politics, I think we're getting into uncharted territory. 21st century elections look very different, and we're trying to respond with 20th century campaigning. Now we're getting into a situation where, we talk about field efforts and getting out the vote efforts and all this stuff. What has happened, and we had a $1 billion presidential election in 2008. We had the single largest political television buy for both sides in the entire country in the Cleveland media market in 2010. So what happens is that you got 20% on this side, 20% on that side, and the middle gets fought about, and everybody else, they're living their lives. So what happens? Millions of dollars get put on TV with attack ads from both sides to try to get the persuadable voters in the last 2.5 weeks of the election. That's what democracy has become in the United States of America.
Okay, now,
it's wrong.
Dan, let me ask you this question.
Yes, go ahead.
As someone who works at a radio station, are both sides going to be spending a lot of money on this radio station? And is WKBN going to be a big winner when this battle goes forward?
Well, I think the media is typically the winner. Bill Kelly could answer that. He'll probably say yes. There's a lot of money going to be spent out here. Although some would say it's unnecessary if we would have just made some amendments to this. We were talking to Joe Schiavone earlier. But look, the big unions, they are going to take millions of dollars from their workers. Then they're going to spend it to elect people that will further their own nest.
And so will the Chamber of Commerce.
Well, come on. Not that kind of money. Salaries
will... The Citizens United case makes that
salaries,
possible.
Salaries will
Both
not
sides.
Be cut.
Neither side should cry poor.
Well, let me ask you. Dave Beatrice seized on the Mahoning County Sheriff's Department, which is near and dear to my heart, and these guys do great jobs down here. But the fact of it is that those folks down there are vastly underpaid, and we need to bring their salaries up. But everybody needs to get a dog in this fight and pay their health insurance. Everybody needs to pay for some of their retirement. They pick 15%. It's still 15% below everybody else.
What about that, Senator?
Bruce, I would agree with that, but what we need is let's solve that problem. Let's talk about that single issue. This bill does way more than that. And that's why I say you don't take out a shotgun to kill a fly.
Then you'd have to talk about every issue, Dave. You'd have to go back all the last 30 years of issues.
If I may, as a member of the Senate and the only other person in this room besides Senator Schiavone that has actually spent the time, I mean, I'm not saying that people in this room did not read the bill, but we actually did have to sit there and vote on it. I actually served a portion of the time on the Insurance, Commerce, and Labor Committee as we were hearing this bill. And the reality is that the people that elect us and send us to work for them in a representative democracy expect us to negotiate on every single point. That's why we're there, Dan. That may be messy, and that may be laborious, and that may be sausage-making, but guess what?
In over 30 years, you've had so many little amendments put in these bills, you'd never negotiate most of the bad ones out.
Well, and that is a failure of the legislature.
And people say, no, okay, go ahead and take that. I mean, this gets rid of that. You can negotiate on wages, salary, terms of employment. That's not a bad thing.
But it is much, much larger than that. And frankly, at the end of the day, you know, the merits of whether or not this thing passed or not, it passed, the law is frozen, and really now it's up to the people of Ohio. We had over 1.3 million signatures submitted to the Secretary of State to repeal Senate Bill 5. This is now called Issue 2. We can't recall members of the General Assembly, but we can't repeal laws.
And don't forget, you've got 400,000 workers, 359,000 workers, and you got 5 million in the private sector.
And let me just say something about the private sector. There was actually a bill that was introduced by the majority, by the Republicans, that would stop overtime for private sector employees. Now,
well, that would be a violation of federal law. I mean, they're federal fair labor standards. You've got to pay overtime. You can't overrule federal law.
Yes, but that's federal. That's the federal minimum wage, not the.
Federal minimum wage would carry in this state.
Right, well, I understand that, but we're not talking about minimum wage. We're talking about overtime.
Dave, that didn't stop
you from putting on a federal bill to vote in Ohio to repeal the bill that was passed by the federal government.
That's totally different, Dave.
No, the point is, it's the same thing.
I don't know what you're talking about.
There's no merit to your argument.
1-800-723-8029. We've got a barn burner in Youngstown, Ohio. Back shortly. Ohio to Austin, Texas. You're listening to Beyond the Beltway. Thanks very much for joining us tonight on our broadcast. Dave Johnson is here. He is the Republican chairman, longtime Republican chairman of Columbiana County. That is in northeast Ohio. And he's carrying the water and the flag for the Republican Party this evening. Also joining us this evening is State Senator Capri Cafaro. And she is from Hubbard, Ohio. And she is the majority leader of
the Ohio Senate. Minority leader.
What did I say?
You said majority. I thank you
Maybe someday.
It'll be a long time from now.
You have higher aspirations, though, right? The state senate is not the end.
No,
of the
actually, I really don't have higher aspirations.
Really? Why not? You're a young woman. Why not?
Because I'm just as disgusted by Washington as the rest of the public, and I am a legislator at heart. I'm a policy person. I hate politics. I've never had statewide aspirations.
But you run for Congress before.
I did, so and then I learned my lesson.
You wouldn't do that again. Now you got name recognition.
No, thank you. I'll pass.
She'd be great down there.
All right. Well, also, Dave Beatrice has been with us. He is the Mahoning County Party Chairman, and he is joining us as well. But as I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast, we will be taking telephone calls and get reaction from people here in the studios at WKBN as well. But again, I mentioned at the beginning of the broadcast that one of the big stories yesterday, above and beyond Michelle Bachmann's victory in the Ohio straw poll.
In Iowa.
What did I say? Ohio?
Ohio.
I almost said
it's getting late.
Bruce, she's so picky.
The other big news came out of South Carolina, and that was Texas Governor Rick Perry announcing that he was going to run for president. Someone that's been keeping track on Governor Perry is Kenny Rehmeyer. He joins us now, follows us every Sunday night on KLBJ in Austin, Texas. Kenny, my question to you is, Before we get into the specifics of what happened yesterday, you're listening to a real knockdown, drag-out battle in the state of Ohio over Senate Bill 5 and collective bargaining for public employees. What's the story in Texas, and where would Rick Perry come down on the discussion we're having this evening in the Buckeye State?
Bruce, thanks. It's hard for me to speak on behalf of the governor. I'll say, frankly, most of the buzz here locally since yesterday has been about Ron Paul and his good showing in that straw poll in Iowa. You know, there's just he's got kind of a cult following down here, and I'm not sure how he gets from that to the Republican nomination. But in any event, you know, Governor Perry certainly had a big day yesterday. He's I guess to try to answer your question, he certainly tried to establish a track record of taking on the federal government, and he has clearly done that over the last couple of years or so here in Texas against President Barack Obama, and you can expect to hear a lot more of that on the campaign trail going forward.
For those listening around the country, one of the biggest knocks against Rick Perry is America ready? Is the Republican Party ready for another Texas governor? What's the answer to that question, and how do the Perry people respond to that?
No, I don't know that they've addressed it fully, and I don't know if they have an answer for that. I think what he's going to fall back on, Bruce, is he believes that Texas is a microcosm of the United States, in that we've got the big cities, we've got farms and ranch land and a lot of things in between. And as you and I have discussed before on your show, he believes that he has a successful model on how to beat a Washington, D.C. insider. And we saw that, you know, here not too long ago when he was running in the gubernatorial primary against a very popular Senator Kay Bailey Hutchison, and he just smoked her. And so he now believes, I think, that they have a successful model to run on nationwide, and we're going to give that a shot. But to your point, he hasn't had a lot of national vetting. He's not been on the national stage. He's pretty popular, I suppose, as leading the Republican Governors Association and so forth, but still a lot of questions, and the Bush fatigue factor, I don't know how he gets around that one.
But also, he and the Bush family are not close at all, correct?
Well, that's what a lot of us have believed, and yet in a recent Time magazine article, he told the interviewer that he'd actually called former President Bush on his birthday on July 6th, and I'm using the governor's words. He said he and the former president have a warm personal relationship, and it was in that conversation that they talked about the possibility of the governor running for office, and the former president told Governor Perry, I know you'll do the right thing.
You would not get into a presidential race that already has seven or eight people in it if you didn't think you were better than everybody else and you didn't see a clear path for victory. What is it about the rest of this field specifically? Let's focus on the one who I think will end up being his principal challenger. I think it will come down between Perry and Mitt Romney. What is it about Mitt Romney that turns Rick Perry off?
Not sure. I could pin that one down. I think what I've heard just up in New Hampshire as he's being questioned and people are trying to pull him out on, okay, you're up against Romney, what are you going to do? He basically said, we're going to let our records speak for themselves. And I think he's going to, again, fall back on something he's very comfortable with and confident of, which is that economic record here in Texas. And you can get some critics who will try, in fact, the White House and his the president's team already trying to, knock the notion down that this governor has had anything to do with the success of our economy here in Texas.
Well, how has he created? I mean, the big issue is he's created a lot of jobs. How has he created those jobs, and were any of those jobs created because of the stimulus that was passed by the Obama administration and by Congress?
The stimulus money actually helped with our debt situation here in Texas. You know, there's actually, and I think we're going to see a lot more of this as the governor gets on the national stage, a piece in the Washington Post today that said the governor helped get this Chinese telecom firm to relocate from China to Plano, Texas, right outside of Dallas. And yet we also learn in this article that the Bush administration and the Obama administration had felt like that this global telecom giant from China poses a potential cybersecurity risk to U.S. military and businesses. So all I'm saying is, as this governor has for years tried to reach out and bring new business and new jobs to the state, he's now going to find that a lot of that's going to come under really severe scrutiny, and we'll see how that stands up. A lot of people have also said that jobs have been created, have been minimum wage jobs, and he's getting criticism of that. I would say there's a lot of governors around the state that would love to have those jobs regardless of the pay scale.
More minimum wage jobs than any other state in the union, I believe.
Right. But one of the other things that I'm going to throw in the mix here is just I believe that his handlers are going to try to remake this governor, Rick Perry, in the image of the second coming of Ronald Reagan. And he is not a Ronald Reagan, but let me just go to a speech yesterday. I mean, the guy said that, for example, in his announcement, Reagan never ceased to marvel at his own country. Perry, in as much, said that in his speech. Reagan believed himself to be a typical American. We heard the governor yesterday and again in Iowa today introducing himself as that, kid from Paint Creek, Texas, who was an Eagle Scout and who married his high school sweetheart and went on to the Air Force. I mean, it's pretty amazing when you step back and just take a look at, I believe, how they're going to try to package this guy as another Ronald Reagan.
Well, whether he's packaged that way or whether he is authentic and is really liked that way, again, in looking at the announcement on television yesterday, it was amazing that the tone, that the optics, that the stylistic of Rick Perry were so reminiscent and so Reagan-esque. I mean, sort of the greased back, wavy black hair, the broad shoulders, the hands, the large hands, the speech pattern. I mean, it was, if you look at the early pictures of Reagan, it was very Reagan-esque. Now, let me ask you, Dave, I mean, you're for Romney. I mean,
Right. Did
you see some of those Reagan-esque things just viscerally? Forget what the man said,
Right. Although
he did say, I want to make Washington, D.C. inconsequential in your life. I mean, that's pretty anti-Washington. But
yeah.
Forget the rhetoric. Just talk about the stylistic. And obviously, it's light years ahead of anyone else in that primary.
No question about it. I thought he presented himself very well. He's an articulate guy. Obviously, he's been a successful politician as a long-serving governor of Texas in a very successful state. He has a message that will resonate, but I still think he's way behind the ball on raising money and putting the organization together all across the
state. Senator, I asked Senator Schiavone to look and look at the opposition party. Does Rick, of the commodities in the Republican Party, where would you put Rick Perry as a potential major challenger to President Obama?
I think that Governor Perry is a significant challenge. I mean, he has been in elected office for 26 years. He does have, as they said this morning on Meet the Press, the greatest opening line. I have created all these jobs. I'm a large job creator in the United States as the longest-serving governor, and because of his credentials as a chief executive.
Didn't Michael Dukakis say that?
He may have.
I think Michael Dukakis said the same thing.
Yeah, you won't find Governor Perry riding around any tanks around.
We won't go there. Nonetheless, I mean, I think that he's a significant. He's a true challenge. I think that former Governor Romney is certainly, I think, on paper a very formidable challenger as well. I think that, with his organization and whatnot. But again, goes back to the point that I was saying earlier. We're dealing in 21st century campaigning. Things are a little bit different. I mean, look at Tim Pawlenty. The guy had like the greatest network in Iowa and came in a distant third in the straw poll. So, we just don't know what we're going to get. And I think that former Governor Romney seems to be his own worst enemy. We're going to see his record, whether it's in the primary or in a general election, used against him as a flip-flopper or in the primary, talk about the health care in the state of Massachusetts. So we'll see.
Kenny, listen, thanks very much for the report. We've got some other calls coming in from Austin, Texas that want to talk about the collective bargaining battle here in Ohio, and we will do that when we continue from coast to coast and border to border, taking America's political pulse from America's great radio stations tonight, coming to you from Clear Channel News Radio 570 WKBN in Youngstown, Ohio. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, in Youngstown, Ohio. Let's say Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us tonight. We are going to go to the audience now, where Morris Ray, who's a talk show host here at WKBN, he's standing by with a woman who has a question or comment. Your name, please?
Donna.
Yes, Donna.
For Senator Cafaro, you contradicted what Senator Schiavone said. He said he didn't read the bill. You said that you all read the bill.
If I may, also,
one other thing. You also said people are taking cuts because of the economy and jobs. Are you willing, as a politician, as the rest of them, to take cuts? People haven't had a raise in Social Security for 3 years, but yet politicians get their pay raises. Are you willing to take a pay cut?
Haven't you passed
a
bill, right?
Well, I co-sponsored a bill that would have pay reduction, but ma'am, I do not take my pay, and I have voluntarily rejected my health care. So I am blessed. I am blessed that I have the ability to do that. I know that that is not customary, and I know that I am in a very blessed situation, but I do not believe, and because I do have that fortunate ability not to take the pay from the tax dollars, and I do not take my pay, and I do not take my health care voluntarily. And I operate a district office because we do not have that ability. In regards to the bill, I think what Senator Schiavone was trying to get at with Senate Bill 5 was that when it was first introduced, they handed the members of the committee a 1,000-page bill. Now, ultimately, as we went through the process, we weren't even given an opportunity to read it before the bill was introduced because they gave it to us. But in the process, we did read it.
Okay, and then Nancy Pelosi come up with a 2,000-page health care bill. Who said we have to pass the bill before you know what's in it?
I've seen those ads,
people,
too.
Yes, and
ma'am,
that's
can
not
I,
fair.
Ma'am, can I just say, what you're talking about, it is an outrageous thought that lawmakers would pass legislation that they haven't read.
But it is not
unique to this state, or it happens.
But
I'm from Illinois. It happens all the time.
If I may.
Systemic problem.
I am on the side of you. I mean, I come from a policy background. My expertise is in healthcare policy. I have done direct service with senior citizens prior to my work as a public servant in office. I have done the grunt work, which is why it doesn't bother me to read the bills. I believe that it is our solemn obligation to do that. And so, yes, while it is customary, it is wrong. And in regards to federal health care reform, I actually am up on it, even though I'm not in federal office.
All right, let's go to Spokane, Washington. Mike is listening to us on KXLY. Go ahead, Mike. Are you there?
Yeah, thank you, Bruce, for taking my call, and thank you for your program throughout the years.
Great.
As you know, I was born in Pontiac, Michigan, so it's go Buckeyes, except when you play Michigan. But my question is, are there any positives in the Ohio economy? Any unique job creations and job training for the unemployed?
Senator?
Yes, actually there are. And you know, while we hear about, you know, our 9%+ unemployment across the state, and here in the Mahoning Valley, where we're broadcasting from, all the way up to where I represent, all the way up to Lake Erie, we do have challenging times. But there are beacons of hope. For example, V&M Star Steel, which makes some very specific kind of piping, for example. They have expanded and are expanding their workforce and their facility here. We actually beat the nation of Brazil for that. We have the Chevy Cruze is made here in my district in Trumbull County, which is the biggest selling car in the United States of America.
Go Cruze.
So, I mean, things are going well. And then we also have Marcellus and Utica Shale, which is going to be a fantastic thing for our community.
And let's talk about it. You have a football coach that you paid $21 million to. That's not good.
Mm-hmm. You're talking
I'm a girl. I have
Jim
no idea.
Tressel.
Talk about Jim Tressel. That's in the past. He no longer runs.
Well, I know, but $21 million.
Yeah. Well, they would, you know, it wouldn't pay him if he didn't deserve it.
More.
Oh, yeah.
Is he
anyway,
worth $21 million?
That's over 10 years, by the way, Bruce. That's not per year.
Well, I know that. But let's go to everybody's so defensive about the football coaching.
We love Jim Tressel here. Huh?
Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Morris has got another question.
I'm disappointed. I'm not going to talk about local stuff. I want to talk about national stuff. I'm disappointed in both parties because without the repeal of the Glass-Steagall Act, Goldman Sachs and the rest of these bankers could not peddle these toxic derivative mortgages to Spain and Greece and Ireland, and causing the the whole world economy to go down, and nothing's being done against these people. They've uncovered, 2 months ago, they uncovered emails that showed that Goldman Sachs not only knew they were toxic and no good, they were shorting them at the same time and making billions off of them. At least under Reagan, under the SNL crisis there, Keating and those guys went to jail. Nobody's going to jail now. And as far as Obama's concerned, he's got Bernanke and Geithner, and those two guys are responsible for from preventing Goldman Sachs from being prosecuted. So they're all in it together. As far as I'm concerned, everybody in the Congress is controlled by the multinational corporations.
Everybody
could care less.
Who agrees with that? Okay. Who does not agree with that? Applaud. Who does not agree with that? Okay. Let's go to Joe in Austin, Texas, wants to talk about Senate Bill 5. Go ahead.
Thanks, Bruce.
One minute.
Texas does not have public sector unions, and we are getting along just fine. I'd like the people to address, why is it that Texas can survive without public sector unions?
That is a question that we will ask rhetorically, and we'll let everybody think about that answer until next week. Dave Johnson from Columbiana County, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Dan Rivers, thank you very much for being with us. Senator Capri Cavallo, thank you very much for joining us. Dave Beatrice, also the Mahoney County Democratic Chairman, have all joined us this evening. Our thanks this evening to Tom Veracruz, who helped produce this program back in Chicago. Bill Kelly from WKBN. Dan Rivers has helped us. John Shekelhoff, big help to him. John Clark, Mike Tidrick, Bobby Ray, Lisa Lampos, and Larry Ward. Our thanks to the Baird Brothers for sponsoring the broadcast. This is a Genevieve production produced in association with WKBN. Until next week at the same time, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Youngstown, Ohio.